Hi there, and welcome to Putting the Squid to Bed, a podcast about creative people and their craft. My name is Tim Lenko. I'm a writer and performer, and on this podcast, I interview creative people about why they create things and how they go about it. The show is named after an image that I have found so helpful. If you're anything like me, you know those moments when you've nearly finished a project, but then you find another touch you could add, another loose end to tie off, or another rough patch that needs ironing out. It's like trying to tuck a squid into bed. Just when you get two or three arms under the covers, another four or five have popped back out. Projects are rarely finished so much as they are surrendered. And that journey of discovery, creation, and surrender is what I ask my guests about. Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of Putting the Squid to Bed. In case we haven't met, hi, I'm Tim. I'm recording on a grim, gray day here in Western Canada, but really, I can't complain. We've had some really great sunshine this week, and right now, I'm actually looking at a guest on my screen who is herself such a source of light in the world. So this call is already brightening my day. By way of introduction, my guest started her film production company, Film Blanc, in the late 1990s and has really emerged as a leader in global storytelling and activism. Her social justice, human rights documentaries have powered global campaigns for change, tackling issues including human trafficking, domestic violence, youth mental health, breastfeeding, and more. She's been celebrated and thanked personally by world leaders, even the Pope, for her tireless research and advocacy and for her truly moving films. Her documentary, Milk, focuses on the marketing around milk supplements and how vulnerable mothers around the world are not always being told the truth about nutrition and how their own milk compares to supplements. I saw it last year at the Regina International Film Festival where I met her and was really moved. I can't wait to talk to her about that film and more. Please welcome into your ears, Noemi Weiss.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tim, for that kind, kind introduction, and a pleasure to be with you here.
It's such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for making the time.
My pleasure.
I'm interested. Where are you calling in from today?
Toronto. That's where my hometown is.
Excellent. Yes. You've been a Canadian for, I remember we talked about it at RIFA, but how many years have you been a Canadian?
Very many years, so many decades that if I talk about how long, it makes me very old. But my whole adult life is Canadian.
Yeah, it's a fantastic home base to be working from. I'm so glad to be where we are.
Yeah, me too. And I very often speak about how I carry both flags in my heart. You know, it's part of who we are. It's our identity. I was recently invited to speak, actually, at an event celebrating Canadian Flag Day from the Ministry of Citizenship, and we talked about, you know, the meaning of carrying both flags, which is something that I speak about often. It's very important, and this country allows us to do that.
Yeah, it's such a gift to be able to hold both. I've heard people talking about it as having roots in multiple places and being nourished by the roots that are in both of those places, which really then bears fruit that's much richer.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And your career really shows that. I've been so impressed and appreciative of what I've seen of your work. I'd love to hear a little bit about how the Milk educational campaign is going, because your documentary has sparked this whole campaign of advocacy and spreading true facts, education. You recently had an event. We're recording here in the middle of March. At the very end of February, you had an event in Ottawa, and you're now like moving on to, I think it's Guatemala?
That's right. That's right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How is the campaign going?
Well, it's a very important project. Very dear to my heart, and I think that films of this nature never die. I thought really that with Milk I had done as much as I was able to do when it was launched, mm-hmm. and I continue with the film going around the world for more than two years. Like I said, I exclusively breastfed that baby for more than 2 years, taking it around the world. And I created an educational program then where the film was used as a tool to bring the stories into life and bring the voices of the protagonists themselves, in this case, the mothers, and the experts from around the world. And now we brought it back because milk was the first medium, really, in a way that uncovered the whole situation of emergencies and what happens with moms and babies at a time of emergency. So it was a strategy that allowed us to bring it back, thanks to the support from the Telos Fund. Milk was their firstborn film. And they were celebrating the 10th anniversary, and they suggested, you know, why don't we bring milk back? And I really thought, you know, we have done everything we can with milk, and I don't know if there's anything more. But then coming up with this strategy of the emergency situations brought up a whole new world into the film itself and what we can talk about. Unfortunately, the world is in an emergency, and we need to really think about moms and babies. So we have partnered with Safely Fed Canada in Canada and many local organizations across the country, and we wrapped up the campaign just last week in Winnipeg at the University of Manitoba with the midwifery department. But just before that, we were in Ottawa as a part of the wrap, really, to be able to talk to politicians, talk to government, talk to people that are actually able to make a difference in the sense of supporting and changing the system and advocating for it. We are making a difference as we are moving forward, and the impact has been incredibly positive. From the media side, I mean, stories like people would ask, journalists would say, we never hear about moms and babies in kinds of emergencies. And our country has suffered an enormous amount of emergencies in the last year alone. I mean, wildfires and many other situations that had happened, and people needed to evacuate from very many places in Yellowknife and in north of Alberta and BC, and in Montreal there was an ice storm and power outage. Yeah. So really it has happened around the country. But we also went to Turkey with the program as a case study. And my intentions there was that at the beginning of 2023 they had an earthquake, and that earthquake provoked a lot of issues, and it's a country that unfortunately suffers very often from earthquakes. So we partner with a local organization, and the film is really bringing the stories, but it's followed by a workshop, which these organizations are able to support and very, very capable of preparing that and giving that preparedness to frontline workers, to caregivers, to parents, and to everyone involved in that communities at large. And in Turkey was extremely successful, and we had to double up the amount of programs that we had started. This is how the result and the impact was. And we started now in Guatemala last week. It's unfortunately the country that suffers from very high rates of malnutrition. And we partner with UNICEF and a whole bunch of other organizations that support us right now. And now we've been told, I mean, we have a screening coming up now on Friday. And we've been asked to extend it for another few others. So already we can see from the one last week that the result was very important. So we are here to create impact and films have that long life when we are dealing with these kind of topics, and they never die.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, it's wonderful to see milk rising like a phoenix from the ashes after you thought it had lived its life. But when you're telling stories that are so universal, so human, so like they're always going to be timely. So then when the stars align, when the opportunities open up, it's a perfect time for that phoenix to rise back up, take flight again. And your team is just going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is a collective effort, definitely.
Yeah. Well, along with those strategic partnerships that you're talking about with other organizations that are doing work in that area, it's fantastic. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm curious, you're going way back to early Noemi. Where did the origin of filmmaking come for you? Where did you first get the spark of storytelling? This is something I want to do. And where did you get that? Where did it start to sprout into, I want it to be on the screen?
Well, I had my own ad agency. So I was in advertising, marketing with global campaigns. So my world has always been very, very global. So coming from that marketing and you know, always telling a message, for whatever reason it was and for a product it was. But back in 98, that's when I decided to start with Film Blank. On a very philanthropic approach, I just wanted to put the world together. At the time when there was no emails and there was no world globalization as we know about it today. There was no internet to bring us together like we are chatting today. But my intentions on doing that was really to bring creative people together. I was constantly hearing from creative people that they couldn't fulfill their dreams because of a budget problem. So from a production standpoint, my intentions were if I create a network of producers and partners from around the world, we can actually offer those creative people to think freely, and we can actually produce anything that they want to produce, no matter where, and we'll make it happen. And that was the beginning. It took me a few years to convince people of what I had in mind. I mean, I traveled around with tapes in those days, suitcases of tapes of creative people. And that was very successful. I brought in the world in very many ways to tell stories from different countries and fulfill the dreams of those people. But my intentions were always to move into documentaries and longer form. And my interest has always been on human rights and social issues from a personal point of view. And once I started with my first film, which was Gloriously Free, about gay communities from around the world and people that had to flee their countries because of sexual orientation, and it was so intimate and it was so nice coming from the circus that those big productions and international productions require. And I call it the circus because there is so much going on and so much happening and so much money going into those productions when actually with a much smaller budget, I could actually create something that would change people's lives in many ways.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me. And I thought this is something that I want to pursue more. And Gloriously Free was very well received. It won awards. It won the award for Best Documentary of the Year by the Canadian Broadcast Association, and I thought, I can do this. And that led me into continuing into bringing up stories of people that normally people don't want to talk about, but it's important that we do talk about. And it's important that we bring those topics to the forefront so we can actually together make a difference. So it is a lot of passion work, a labor of love, but at the same time, my work has a very big purpose. And the purpose is that my medium, in this case film, is being used for a very important cause, and that it carries a message that is as global and as intimate to make the audience relate to those stories. So it's a challenge. Yeah. It's a huge challenge and a very big undertaking every time.
I can just imagine. And I can hear what you're saying about having a purpose infused approach. It's there, beginning, middle, and end of the whole story that you just shared. Like, that was what you started in on to help support creatives who didn't have the budgets. It's always been the focus of your documentaries. It's always been the focus. It's the connecting of people. It's the improving quality of life. It's defending those who are vulnerable. Its purpose is threaded through everything that you've done.
It is so much work to put a documentaries in general, films in general. It doesn't matter anything that you want to put on the screen. It takes an enormous amount of effort. So in my case, I feel if I'm going to spend so much time, it has to be meaningful.
Yeah, definitely. How do you go about navigating, because the world is so full of so many things that you could pay attention to. How do you go through navigating what's next? What's the next cause? What's the next story?
Well, that's difficult usually. It either comes to me by something that I have read, something that I have heard, or someone brings up the possibility of talking about a topic or talking about a story. But mostly I think it has to touch my heart.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, then it doesn't work. I have to really, really feel it in my heart. That's where the passion comes in. That's where the creativity comes in. That's when I can sit down and write and talk about it and visualize what I want to make happen from that topic or that story, right? I always say that I produce dreams. It starts with a dream. This is what I would like to do. And then it carries forward.
Yeah. And so when you're talking about, once something has touched your heart, once you have visualized a dream related to something, is that what your next steps are in? You start writing a lot to try and get an idea of the frame and the purpose and the direction? Is that, or what's your...
In my case, I believe in research very strongly. And when I get into any of the topics, I personally feel that I need to know a lot before I will even embark on it. So it might be an initial concept, an initial idea that it's very, very open and broad. But I strongly believe that in order for me to write or to even propose something like that to anyone, I have to do research. And I take it very seriously, sometimes too long. In people in my team think that really is a lot of time. I mean, with Milk, I was 2 years or more doing research. It's a health issue. With Connecting the Dots, I spent, I think, 2.5 years doing research and writing and rewriting and rewriting. The more I talked to people, the more ideas came through, and when you're dealing with health issues, like in the case of these two particular films, I personally feel very responsible that I have to know very much the topic. It's like I take a master's course on each of the topics, because when we put anything in writing or anything on the screen or whatever creative ideas we bring forward to a public, to an audience, one of the things that we have to make sure is that that message cannot be refuted, that we are saying something that is true. And in order to know that, yes, you have to be very objective and look at things from a different perspective and listen to different opinions. And in many ways, you know, try, in my case, I prefer that the audience will make their opinion about what's right and what's wrong instead of me spoon-feeding the message. Mm. But it's through the stories of the protagonists themselves that they can do that. And that requires a lot of time and a lot of dedication. With connecting the dots, I must have talked to over 300 young people from around the world, as much as experts mm-hmm. in the field, from different perspectives until, you know, the story starts coming together. And then, of course, you know, in documentaries, you write the story, as they said many times. First is the concept,
yeah.
and then when you go out to film, I always have the plan and I always know what I'm going to be doing. But at the same time, I leave room for magic because there is that magic that is very special. And then at the editing stage, we rewrite it again. I mean, how are we going to bring it all together? Always with a vision. And a mission. I think that there's, in my case, I always have a mission. There's something very particular and a goal that that film has to achieve. And if I'm able to do that, then the film will live for a very long time. And they do. They do.
Yeah, like in the case of Milk, Rising from the Ashes Again.
Yes, and you know all my films because I was talking with one of the distributors that was just sending a report on and one of the films that I did back in 2006 is one of the ones that has been seen most in the last number of years.
Which one is that?
That's Let's Talk About It, about domestic violence. And that was brought back, really, I think, by the audience themselves. Apparently during COVID and during all those years that we just went through, so much isolation, domestic violence came to a rise. So I think that all the films have a life of their own, but you have to be with them as well. It's like children.
No kidding. When you're talking about going into filming with a plan and then leaving room for magic, I'm interested in your standard for preparation before that. Like you've got all of this research and you've got all of this, you know, understanding. You've got your master's degree in the project or in the subject, and then you're creating a plan for filming. Is the standard of preparation and planning that, like, okay, this is a script that could be edited and be a sound piece finished with integrity, and then you're letting magic pop up and then you change the plan? Or do you go into it with here's a research outline or a research plan, here's our plan for how we're going to gather stories and material, and we'll be recognizing the story and how it fits together after? What does that preparation look like? What does that plan look like when you're about to go into filming?
Well, there's a lot of pre-production, and part of the pre-production is becoming very close to each of the subjects, to each of the people that are part of the film. We become very close. I try as much as possible to know as much as possible about their lives. So then I know exactly what I want to achieve every time that I go to see them, wherever they are in the world, because many, many times I go to places that I know the person that I'm going to meet, but I have no idea how their house or apartment or where they live looks like. So there's a lot of magic that comes into how do we set and how do we tell the story. But by the time we take the time to go and travel to that place, I have learned quite a lot. We have become very close. To be able to know exactly how am I going to do that interview, how am I going to tell the story of that person, and how that story will make a difference, because that story in my case has been chosen because it represented maybe hundreds of other similar stories that I have heard. So they are all symbols that people around the world, when they watch the film, they can say, that could be me, or that could be someone that I know. And because of that, then that's where the magic comes in when, yes, I go with a focus. I know exactly why am I going to film that. There's a reason that that person was chosen, because she or he have a very special angle into my story that has not been told yet. And I need to cover that angle of the story or that perspective of the story. And then the magic comes in, because when you're in that place, things happen. And you've got to be able to allow that. Either is because there's a location change, or because the person has said something, or that I, at that moment, I go into a zen, really, where I have eyes everywhere and I can see and smell and feel what's happening around me in a different way. And then maybe we want to capture something different. We want to do something different. Or they offer something different. And why not? You know, we are in a digital era right now. So we are not like I have been many years ago, where we were traveling with tape. So we knew how much we needed to do, and right now we don't have that problem. We can edit, we can continue filming, we can actually divert from that story if we need to, because it might be good for another story that we had covered in another location. We just don't know.
Are there memories of those moments of magic, or where you discovered, oh, here's a change of direction, that have stuck with you and have meant, that still mean a lot to you?
Yeah, I can name very many, I think. With connecting the dots, the opening scene with the buses, for example, that was not in my plan. It was actually created because we were just getting ready to receive all the children coming into the school, and a conversation that I was having with the principal of a school alerted me that the buses were coming. And within seconds, really, I just had a whole vision of what I wanted. And my team was incredibly receptive to it, and they responded immediately. And everybody supported, and we were able to do that. And that was magic. That was very magical, because it was a beautiful moment, and I can name you very many.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredibly special.
But that means being creative at that moment and trying to think, what can I do with this, and can I do something else?
Yeah. Yeah. It also speaks to an extraordinary amount of trust with the team, the crew that you've got. And a lot of skill from a lot of people being able to hop in and help make that instantaneous creativity actually work.
Yeah, I mean, the team is very important. I spearhead the whole idea, but it's a collective effort. And I could never be able to do these kind of films without having the support from the people that are with me. And that there's an understanding, I think, in the same way that there's an understanding with the stories, the people that lend their time to me by telling their story and being a protagonist in the film. It's the same thing, the connection with the team. I mean, there's a very big trust and also a huge amount of communications that has to go through in order to understand each other all the time and to know where we're going to go. So that pre-production is fundamental. The pre-production is very, very important, because first of all, we deal with a budget. We have limited budget, or even if we have a lot of budget, that still becomes limited because we want to do so much usually, right?
Yes.
And we want to maximize. So by the time we go out to actually a production, which is so costly, we really have to make sure, in my case, I mean, that's the way I work. I don't know how everybody else works. Mm-hmm. I can only speak from my own perspective and what I tend to do. But pre-production is fundamental because we don't want to waste money. We don't want to waste time. And we are respectful for everybody who's lending their time and offering that possibility of us telling their story, which is, for me, very, very important.
Absolutely. Well, they're putting so much trust in you because you're the one who has the hand on the steering wheel of how they end up looking and sounding, how their story gets summarized. It's an extraordinary amount of trust. So being able to honor that is a high, high... you're being held accountable to something really big.
Yeah, and that's a huge responsibility. I heard one of the best compliments ever recently from one of the young people that is part of Connecting the Dots. She was with me in a presentation that we did here in Canada, and she said to me, you know, one of the things that I am very happy is that whatever you told me the first day we met, you're following. You're doing it.
Yeah.
We are here together. And that was the best compliment for me, because that was not only that she trusted me, but I did not disappoint her. Mm-hmm. And whatever I had promised, I'm following, right? So that's very important. Yes, that's why. You know, we have to be careful when we promise.
No kidding, because our word will be remembered by someone, and it will matter whether we follow through on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's excellent. I'm interested in whether or not along the way. How many projects, or have there been projects where you've dug in, begun researching, begun connecting with people, and it became clear that it wasn't a documentary that was willing to be made yet? That it wasn't a story that wasn't prepared to be told?
Yeah, very many. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I got a lot of no's in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And sometimes working with multiple projects, which I'm not doing anymore, but I used to. One takes prevalence, and once you get a yes on one, the other ones become dormant. It doesn't mean that those stories are not important. It's just that I cannot tackle, as an independent filmmaker, more than one project. That, although there have been times where I did three films at the same time, and it was a lot. I'm not doing that anymore because it's too much. It's really too much. I can work on different projects, but not the production of a film itself. They are different stages of different projects, and I can do that, of course. But yes, very many no's. And even on the films that have been made, I got a lot of no's. There's a lot of times where... there are so many no's that come through, and so much disappointment, and you question yourself, do I continue? What? In the beginning, I used to stay in bed for a couple of days with a no. I was like, how am I going to do this? Now I'm a little bit stronger, although I'm not going to say that it doesn't affect a no, but it's just another opinion. It's one person who's maybe saying... no, but I believe in it, and my team believes in it and strongly, I just don't give up. We just continue.
Yeah. So how did you cultivate that resilience? How did you go from spending a couple of days in bed to the very, very purposeful, determined woman that's sitting in front of me?
It takes a lot of effort. It's not easy, Tim. It's a daily work. You've got to continuously, like, I don't know if I overcame all the vulnerability that we face. I mean, doing this type of work, you can imagine
it's
that I'm very sensitive myself. So, of course, I would take a no very seriously. But I try to reverse that right now. I try to think, well, it wasn't for them. Or it was not the moment, or just mm-hmm. finding a positive affirmation that is going to help me out to get out of that negative situation and moving forward. But it still affects me. I mean, it's like we are human beings talking and telling human stories. So we are all very connected. And it's very difficult to be oblivious and say it did not affect me. I'm not that strong. It affects me, but it affects me less.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really sounds like your clear sense of purpose is a big part of helping temper how negatively it affects you. And then giving some context for like what that no is and like realizing that no is just a puzzle piece in this whole picture. It's just like a chapter in this journey. And so it really sounds like that purpose is a big part of it for you.
Yes. Also, I have learned through the process that some of the no's that I have received had a purpose as well, because maybe it made me think differently on the next speech, or maybe it brought some thoughts that I did not think about before that I could improve on, or a different perspective on the story. It's not easy, because obviously we don't want to hear that anyone tells us that the way that we are going to tell the story is not the right one. But at the same time, I think that we have to be open to receive criticism or to receive a no. And it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. I cannot lie and say, well, you'll get used to it. You'll get used to it if you are resilient to it and work a lot on yourself to believe in your message and be, you know, and know that there's a reason why you want to do this. There's people that have been trying to make films for 20 years and then they bring it forward. I was associate producer on a film. The director passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago, but he was with that film for 20 years trying to make it. And eventually we made it happen. So how many no's did he get? And he never gave up, right? So
Have you ever had the experience where a subject, a story, a topic has received so many no's and it's reached a critical mass and you've decided, you know what, that's got to go on the shelf. We're not doing that project right now.
Not really.
Okay.
Not really, not that many that I would give up, because I don't give up that easy. I think that if I left some of the projects aside was because another project was moving into production and I just couldn't tackle that one. But if I had started to work on any project, I still believe that time was not the right time and another time will come.
And it will come to fruition. It will have its chance to be nourished and actually grow up into what it is meant
to be. That's right. If I'm ready to bring it back. Because there's moments where I would say, well, maybe not. Or maybe this is more relevant. Or maybe I outgrew that story. You know, it could be that you had started with an idea and then years pass and it's like, the world has changed. I have changed. How do I relate to it? I can bring it forward, but with a lot of changes to it.
Yeah.
There's an evolution. I mean, there's a creative evolution that happens at all times, right?
Yes, absolutely. And you have to be, you have to remain so attentive to both the world around you and what's going on with you. So from the, like to be a student of yourself, to be aware of how you're relating to everything. So I think I can probably guess how voraciously you read and watch things throughout the world to be attentive to what's going on in the world. I'm curious about how you are a student of your own heart. How do you remain attentive to what's going on to you to see whether you're outgrowing something or whether you're growing into something? Are you a journaler? Are you a meditator? Are you do you have people that you talk to on a regular basis? How do you be a student of your heart?
I've been doing yoga for at at least 30 years. Uh-huh. I do a lot of meditation. I do yoga. I do qigong. I read a lot. And I work really on myself to grow every single day. So it's part of my practice. It's part of my daily life. And I don't take anything for granted. So not even myself. So at the same time, the topics that I deal with are very difficult. So very, very seldom people will say, how are you feeling? You know, connecting the dots was probably one of the most difficult topics I have dealt with. And talking with more than 300 young people and listening to them on a daily basis was very difficult. Very few times someone had asked me, how do you feel? How do you overcome that? How do you continue? It's not easy. And I think that I have learned to have a lot of discipline in my time to be able to, that yoga and that qigong and that meditation that I do, it's part of my daily practice. And when I don't do it, for whatever reason, I feel unbalanced. Really, my day is very different. So that has helped me. And I think everybody finds their own way of what makes you happy, what makes you zen in a way, and focus and be able to be objective. It's very difficult to be totally objective when you're dealing with topics that somehow you are related to. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother. So it is very difficult not to have some self-reflection and questioning yourself and saying, have I done right? Am I doing okay? Was there something that I could be doing better? Are my kids okay? You question that all the time.
Totally. It's so interesting that no one would think to ask you that, because it was the second thought that I had right after, these are beautiful. I was like, I wonder if she and her team are okay being exposed to that all the time. Because I've only sat with it for an hour and a half. They have for years.
That's right. It's very hard. And most of the time on the long process of research, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I'm really on my own. Yeah. So I take long walks. I remember with Connecting the Dots, after talking to any of the young people, I had to go out for a walk and breathe and calm myself. I remember years ago with Let's Talk About It, when I was doing research, it took me 2 days to recuperate from anyone that I had talked to after their story.
Yeah.
Was so difficult.
I bet.
And then slowly you're getting, you know, a little bit better at being objective and don't take it so personal. But I feel for these people. And I think that the reason that they are trusting in me is that they know that I am as vulnerable as they are. We are all vulnerable people. But also they know that I care and that I'm not judging and that I'm listening to their story, you know, from the heart. So that's where the trust comes in, is building up that trust that there's no judgment, there's safety net there that people can actually talk. And very often people tell me, I've never talked about this before. Well, we got into this topic, so let's delve in it. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm interested, where did you pick up and develop your warmth and your attentiveness and your curiosity, like that ability to disarm these people and to gain their trust? How did that develop for you? And maybe it's not something that was intentionally cultivated. Maybe it's just something that has been within you this whole time. But I am curious about that background.
I don't know if you develop that. I think that it's, in a way, is innate. But at the same time, I can tell you that one of my biggest fortunes is that I have friends all around the world, very many of them.
Yeah.
I love to connect with people. I love communications. I love to talk to, I talk to people all the time, to people that I don't know. I'm very curious. I speak many languages. I love culture, different cultures. I love to connect with people and understand what they're feeling, what they're thinking. And that's where I put time into learning all these languages, because I just need to communicate. So it's a thirst for communications that I think has always been with me. And and I don't know, I think it's part of each other's, each personality. And maybe my personality has always been about communicating with people, and people feel that we are talking not only the same language. Sometimes we don't talk the same language, but there's a physical connection that we can see, that people feel, you know, this is safe. We can talk.
Yeah, I love that.
And it's building that trust, and it's building that trust. And I think that trust comes with a lot of effort. Nothing comes easy. I'm telling you the story of finished products. We are talking about finished products, but the road to get to those products, to get to those films, to get to anything has not been easy.
Yeah.
Has been very, very difficult. And I don't know if it's called proving yourself that you can do it, or proving to other people that you can do it, but it's like we said before, it's having a purpose. This is what I want to talk about, and this is why. And that's my ability that I can offer, you know, as a storyteller. Yeah. I can tell the story. I'm going to offer this platform. I have my background into telling stories from different perspectives, bring my marketing background into having worked with so many different clients in my ad agency, but also bringing that into the communications of how do I bring in that film to the world as well, because my job doesn't end when the film is completed. It starts again. And not too many people do that, but I feel that I need to do it. And the reason I need to do it is because that story needs to be told over and over and over again until we make actually a difference, until someone is going to actually be part of it. So it is a continuous communications, and I think that some people have the ability to do things with their hands. Some people have the ability to do creative work in the kitchen. And I bring to the world my storytelling and my communication skills.
Yeah. Well, I find it really inspiring how skillfully and warmly you do it, and how purposefully you do it.
Thanks.
And the way that you are making ripples, that you are making movements that will contribute to real change.
I'm hoping, but it's people like yourself, Tim, that you're taking the time to talk to me, and you're bringing that story to other people that might get inspired, and hopefully they will. It's a collaboration. I cannot do this alone. It's your time, it's your interest in knowing more about me, and that my message together with your message and your inquisitive mind in knowing more will bring another person to be inspired and say, well, I can also do it. If she can do it, if Tim can do it, I can also do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I know that we've got people listening who are eager to do it, whatever the it is that's related to this. We've got people who are storytellers, whether they are stewarding true stories in their writing or in their songwriting, or we've got therapists who listen too, and others who write fiction that does, like you said earlier, become a symbol that other people watching or reading can connect with and recognize themselves or someone that they love. I'd be interested to know advice that you might offer to any of those folks who are listening and like you say, might be inspired to do it, whether they're doing it already or timidly desiring to start. What's advice that you would have for people who are stewarding stories, real or fictional, for actual change and for people to connect with?
Well, follow your heart. If that story talks to you, then try to bring it forward. Lose the fear. I think fear stops us. And try and give it a try and see and have confidence that you are able to bring that story forward. Accept criticism because that will come. Be open to opinions if you feel like you need those opinions. If you don't feel like you need those opinions and you know exactly what you want to say, then follow that. Follow that because understanding and listening to yourself will actually make it more powerful. It will come as it, you know, it will show the true author behind it. And that's the intentions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Thank you. That's a great encouragement. I am so glad to have talked to you today. This has been such a pleasure, Noemi.
My pleasure. But for me as well, I'm delighted that you're doing this and that you're bringing these stories and these conversations to creative people that sometimes they have so many things to say. We all do. And that they are not bringing them forward for whatever reason it is. It doesn't matter, right? There's no story that is old story. There is no story that is... That is not a good story. You've got to tell the story. You've got to tell that story that you want to... That's how people connect with each other. I always tell my team, I train a lot of people, I mentor a lot of people, and I have been for many years, and I always tell them, no idea is a bad idea. Just tell me any ideas that you have. Maybe we are not able to fulfill that idea, but it's very possible that maybe we can take that idea and develop that idea or change that one or make it better or from that little seed of an idea bring something forward that is different or is stronger, and you were the seed of that, right? So there's no idea that is a bad idea.
Absolutely. Because it's coming from a person who is connected to this humanity that has had this enduring story, and it's connected to something universal.
That's
because it's coming from someone who's connected to this universal humanity.
That's right. That's right. That's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much. Before I let you go, last question I want to ask you is whether there's something in your life right now that feels like it's saving your life. It could be something that you're reading. It could be something you're doing or watching, or it could be people that are in your life. What's something right now that feels like it's saving your life?
I don't think I can name one thing that saves my life.
Okay.
Because there's very many. I think that I'm very fortunate to have the family that I have. I'm very fortunate to have the friends that I have. I'm very fortunate to have the people I work with that believe in me. There's an army of inspired people that are with me. It's just incredible. Like even with Milk, just as an example, the fact that one idea and then how many people are working on this and how many people got involved. I was in tears when I saw the amount of organizations that got together in Guatemala to be able to support this project. It's like if you look at the invitation alone, has about 10 different logos of all these people that came together to support this. Yeah. And that is priceless, really. So can I name one? I don't think so. My life is very full of many things, and I am very grateful of every moment. And I continue, you know, going through anxieties and battles like everybody and facing the difficult world that we live in and trying to see, you know, can I make a difference? Can I have a better day today? But at the same time, I think that being grateful is where everything starts. So there's a lot of things that I can talk about. And also about this Love conversation, it. I think that's part of my day. So you made my day very special today. What you're doing with Rita is particularly meaningful. It's not just a festival, but it's a festival with a purpose. It's a festival with a mission. So that's big part of your grain into the world as much as many other things that you do in your daily life. So thank you for that.
Yes, you're welcome. Oh, thank you for your encouragement and your participation in that, because it means a lot. Yeah. This has been so good. To all of you who have been listening, thank you so much. If you'd enjoyed this conversation, please leave us a rating wherever you're listening and share it with someone you think may also like it. You can find me on Instagram at Timothy Lenko and at Timothy Lenko Music. Noemi, where can people find you and follow you online?
On Film Blank, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and on the website, more than anything.
Yeah, you got a great website, yeah.
Filmblank.com.
Sounds great. We'll put links to all those things in the show notes so that people can easily click and easily find that. All right, I'll be back in just 1 week with a brand new episode. And until then, thanks again for listening.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Tim. It's been a real pleasure. And I appreciate your time and your effort in putting this together. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine.